From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. Great to see you here. Listen, we got a great show for you today. We got comic Maz Jobrani. He'll be joining us later. He's part of the great tradition of Iranian American comics. All right, he's starting the tradition, but still. But first, look, Democrat Charlie Rangel is in big trouble with the House Ethics Committee. And I just want to say up front, we're very disappointed, not in his alleged breaches, but in his lack of imagination. Using congressional letterhead to solicit donations. Not reporting income on a rental home. Ooh. Come on, Charlie, think about what you're capable of and try again next time. Tickle fights with the interns, okay? Give us something to work with. Whatever your hobby is, give us a call. The number 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Patrick from Kansas City.
Hey, how are things in Kansas City?
Oh, not bad, thank you. A little rainy.
A little rainy. You're supposed to say everything's up to date.
Everything's up to date.
Thank you. Next time you call, we'll do it right. Well, welcome to the show. Okay. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a comedian, a filmmaker, and the man behind the new book, Satiristas, Mr. Paul Provenza.
Hey, Patrick.
How's it going?
And next is the woman behind the advice column, Ask Amy, and the author of the memoir, The Mighty Queens of Freeville, Ms. Amy Dickinson.
Hello, Patrick.
And finally,
hello, Amy.
Like, you know, Patrick, you really have to show up for rehearsals.
And finally, it's a humorist and the author most recently.
Hello, Patrick.
Yeah, Troy right. Blunt Jr., there he is. It is famed comic timing.
Yeah.
Patrick, welcome to the show. You're going to start us off, of course, with Who's Carl This Time? Carl Castle is going to read you three quotes from this week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you will win our prize. Carl's voice on your home answering machine. You ready to go?
Yes.
All right. Here is your first quote.
This isn't a leak. It's a hemorrhage.
That was Mark Mardell of the BBC expressing his surprise at the huge trove of classified documents released that are all about what?
Failures in Afghanistan.
Exactly right. Now, for the last year or so, the Obama administration has been trying to sell us the Afghan war. It's like a very expensive used car. And ladies and gentlemen, we just got the Carfax. Turns out the previous owner was the Soviet Union, and boy, did they wreck it.
It was all from the last administration, of course. Everything's going fine now, so there's no reason to.
Well, actually, yeah, this is true. The Obama administration has said this is all from, you know, up to like 2 years ago, so everything's changed. Now they're in charge. They made a lot of changes. For example, they are no longer writing stuff down.
I understand they sent a massive shipment of hope over.
Yes, they did. Yeah. Patrick, here's your next quote.
Tony Hayward is about to get his life back.
That headline from the Washington Post was about Tony Hayward. He has his life back because he's leaving his job as the head of what?
British Petroleum.
Exactly, or BP as it's now known in this streamlined time. Hayward, the CEO who was to good PR what 40 million gallons of crude oil was to Pelicans, will be stepping down as the CEO of BP. And he's going to be posted to Russia, where his job will be to oversee some projects there and, for God's sake, not blow anything up this time. Of course, to be fair, Russia is not the worst place in the world. Thanks to Tony Hayward, that would be the Gulf of Mexico. The new CEO of BP, I don't have his name in front of me, but I believe it's something Vader. He has... promised that from now on, BP will be less evil. It'll be all peaches and cream. In fact, their peaches and cream well just exploded and smothered the entire Louisiana coast with dessert.
So wait, why is he posted to Russia? Is that because they don't have an outpost on Mars?
Because that's where Siberia is.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Patrick, here is your last quote.
What has been the woes and what has been the thorn?
That was Barbara Walters. As you could tell. Asking a typically pointed question to whom on The View this week?
Barack Obama.
Yes, 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 yes. Now, Obama has done a lot of non-traditional media, but for some reason the idea of him sitting down with Whoopi and Barbara and the rest got everybody upset, you know? Oh, it's unpresidential. Well, why exactly? Well, you know, they're ladies. They talk about lady stuff. And he's the president. He should be concentrating on serious business, like going on ESPN every damn year to spend half an hour discussing his brackets.
But, you know, the good news is that now his menstrual cycle is synced with air.
That's so important. That happens, I'm told, when they all get together. Moving right along, Ed Rendell, for example. Ed Rendell criticized Obama's appearance. He's an ally of Obama. He criticized Obama's appearance, saying it was like going on Jerry Springer. Governor Rendell said this from the august set of Morning Joe. Carl, how did Patrick do in our quiz?
Patrick had 3 correct answers, Peter, and that's enough to win our prize.
Well done. Well done, Patrick. Thank you so much for playing.
My pleasure.
Take care. Bye-bye. Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Amy, Kentucky Senate candidate Rand Paul was interviewed recently about the controversial practice of mountaintop removal there in Kentucky. That's when mining companies shear off the top of mountains and dump it all into valleys and streams nearby. He believes he's come up with a solution to the problem posed by mountaintop removal. The mining companies just need to do what?
Take off the whole mountain, obviously.
No.
Not just the top.
No, it's even simpler. Sort of a PR approach.
Just stop calling it that.
Right. Call it something else. Right. That's his solution. Mr. Rand thinks this whole thing is just a PR problem. Quote, most people would say the land is of enhanced value because now you can build on it, unquote. He says calling it mountaintop removal just draws attention to the fact that you're removing a mountaintop when what you're really doing is adding a plateau. Ooh.
Which, of course, makes a fine Walmart parking lot.
It does. Mountain biking would be easier. Now it's plateau biking. Mm-hmm. That great romantic song, Ain't No Plateau Flat Enough, could be played. Who can forget Martin Luther King's speech, I have been to the moderately high flat place.
Be great, though. You climb it. You just sort of toss a rope out in front of yourself. Pick it up and
pick it up.
Toss it out in front of yourself.
Paul, a new report this week shows that in just 9 months at the beginning of the Iraq War, the Coalition Provisional Authority spent $9 billion taxpayer dollars on what?
We.
We?
We for the soldiers to play.
Wii. Well, Wii games.
Wii, yeah.
They did. I don't think we had Wiis back in 2003, 2004.
It was very cutting-edge military technology.
Yeah, very video game technology. No, not
no,
that.
No, I don't. $9 billion.
$9 billion.
I'm stumped.
Does it involve Jenny McCarthy and a USO show?
No, it doesn't.
Just asking.
Yeah.
Well, didn't they lose $9 billion? So maybe that's it.
That's the answer. Nobody knows.
Nobody
has any idea. You know what it's like? You know what it's like? You go to the ATM, you get out $100. A few days later, you go to buy a Diet Snapple, and you look in your wallet, there's nothing there. And you're like, where'd the money go? Just like that.
So in a strange way, I kind of got the answer right.
You did, actually. You didn't know? Neither. Look. How could we punish you for not knowing where the money went when they didn't know where the money went?
I like this game.
Now, the Coalition Provisional Authority could have done a better job preventing this kind of carelessness. Their first mistake was getting the $9 billion from the U.S. in the form of $9 $1 billion bills. Yeah.
I'll tell you who does know what happened to
who
that
does
money.
Know?
WikiLeaks.
They probably know. Not only do they have no idea what happened to the money, they also don't know why the mayor of Tikrit now has a toupee made out of solid gold.
Wow, that sounds really uncomfortable.
It does.
It's a little hot.
How do you lose $9 billion in 9 months?
I could not do that.
It is disgusting that they would lose $9 billion instead of misspending it the way they're supposed to.
Exactly.
You know, the only thing... The only way I can think of to lose that amount of money is, honestly, a kitchen renovation.
Exactly. Thank you so much. Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Brett Morash from New Rochelle, New York.
New Rochelle, New York. Beautiful, just outside New York City. What do you do there?
I'm on the faculty of the Naval War College in Newport, Rhode Island.
I was going to say, is there a Naval War College in New Rochelle?
No. I commute up there on Mondays and come home on the weekend.
Oh, I see. Well, welcome to the show, Brett. Now, you're going to play our game in which you have to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Brett's topic?
What the heck is this? I said no brown M&Ms.
At Woodstock, it rained nonstop. The brown acid was no good, and still they played for 3 whole days. Well, rock stars ain't what they used to be. This week, we had a story that had us wondering if today's bands had gone soft. Our panelists are going to tell you 3 stories about bands acting like flighty little divas. Choose the true story, you'll win Carl's voice on your home voicemail. Ready to play?
Ready to go.
First, let's hear from Paul Prevenza.
It was not off with the heads of the Kings of Leon. It was all over their heads. The megastar rock band was only 2 or 3 songs into their sold-out arena show in St. Louis, Missouri, when they abruptly stopped playing and left the stage after receiving, shall we say, very bad reviews from a flock of pigeons that had made a home in the rafters above the stage. Apparently unhappy with the band's opening numbers, the pigeons decided to commandeer the stage and give the audience their live version of an Alfred Hitchcock film classic instead. Kings of Leon bassist Jared Followhill took several hits of pigeon insurgent chemical warfare right to the face. Drummer Nathan Followhill, in a burst of irony, tweeted their disappointed fans, saying, "It was not only disgusting, it was too unsanitary to continue. It was a toxic health hazard to all of us." The band left the stage, went back to their hotel, presumably to do drugs and engage in unprotected sex.
The Kings of Leon, driven from the stage by a phalanx of pigeons above. Your next story of rock stars proving they just don't got it anymore comes from Amy Dickinson.
The Flypaper Experiment is a musical group of recent high school graduates from Sheboygan, Michigan. And so when they were hired to play for a local wedding last weekend, they got excited, a little too excited. They decided to draw up a contract, and they threw in a rock star contract writer just to keep things professional. "We all like chocolate milk, so I was like, hey, let's get it," said Calvin Derrick, the bassist. But in their excitement, the marrying couple forgot to supply the half gallon of milk the group had demanded. And so while the group was in the middle of playing the couple's special song, Color My World, the manager, also Calvin's mother, rushed the stage. "Chocolate milk! Chocolate milk! Give my boys their freaking chocolate milk!" she yelled. Just as the angry bride and her maids rushed the stage, the group ran out the back. An usher smashed a piece of wedding cake into the guitar player's face. The group is not living happily ever after, and the whole matter will be settled in court.
A group of young musicians. rebels because they got no chocolate milk, as they were promised. Your last story of rocking, rolling, and whining comes from Roy Blunt, Jr.
We Are Not Men, a cross-gender Devo tribute band. Bill themselves as, quote, beyond sexual, meta-straight and meta-bent. In fact, they never even use definite pronouns. They'll say, well, I was talking to Frankie, and he or she said to me, We Are Not Men have vowed never to do mainstream media interviews again after an experience this week while on tour in Chattanooga. The local TV segment had just been going smoothly enough, lead singer he/she having just made news by criticizing Lady Gaga for refusing to deny that she is a man. When the interviewer said, listen, I totally get the music and everything, but what are y'all? And the whole band burst into tears. Later, a spokesman for We Are Not, or spokesperson for We Are Not Men, accused the interviewer of being unacceptably categorical.
So here are your choices from Paul Prevenza, the Kings of Leon, the band, driven from a stage early in their set by some incontinent pigeons, from Amy Dickinson, a young band refusing to perform because there was no chocolate milk, as there was supposed to be, or from Roy Blunt Jr., the band We Are Not Men, getting very upset because somebody just asked them, well, then what are you? Which of these is the real story of a rock band showing that they just don't make them like that anymore?
Well, they're all pretty good, but I'm going to have to go with Paul's story with the Pigeons' review of the Kings of Leon.
Really? Well, to find out the correct answer, we spoke to someone who witnessed this event firsthand.
We did see one pigeon sitting up in the rafter, and it was pooping. But at that point, it's like, why wouldn't you just move everything over?
That was Jennifer Lauder asking a very sensible question, who was at the Kings of Leon concert in St. Louis last Friday. Congratulations, Brett. You got it right. You did it right. You earned a point. To Paul Prevenza, you've won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting in your home answering machine. Well done, Brett. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And now the game where we invite on talented people and utilize none of those talents. It's really a waste of everybody's time when you think about it. Our guest, comedian Maz Jobrani, is one of the founding members of the Axis of Evil comedy tour. You might have seen him on TV, on Better Off Ted, or Curb Your Enthusiasm, or 24. His DVD, Maz Jobrani, Brown and Friendly, is out now. Maz Jobrani, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thanks for having me.
How are you?
Great.
So let's cut right to the chase. You're Iranian.
Yes, I am.
You lead with that.
Well, it's good for people to know.
Yeah.
Then when I start talking about growing up Iranian, they know why I'm talking about it.
Right. You were born in Iran?
I was born in Iran. I was there till I was six. Uh-huh. And then I moved to Bay Area, grew up in Northern California in a city called Tiburon.
Oh, sure. Tiburon's beautiful.
Yeah, I had a tough childhood.
You did?
Yeah.
Do you remember, I know you were just six, and that was a long time ago for all of us, but do you remember making the transition and coming to America for the first time?
You know, one of the first memories I have, we stopped in New York for a little bit, and I remember going to Macy's with my mom.
Yeah.
And I was a big fan of the color orange.
Mm-hmm.
And they had Snoopy orange gloves, hat, and scarf, and I bought it, and it was the best thing ever. I loved America right there.
That right there. Because yeah. You had Snoopy at Macy's.
Should we be sending some of that stuff out over there to Middle East?
Make friends.
Would that help?
Now,
grab some orange Snoopy stuff. You got them.
So you talk in your act about your parents. They were traditional in many ways. What did they think about your choice of career?
Well, you know, a lot of immigrant parents, especially Middle Eastern parents, want you to be a lawyer or a doctor.
Yeah.
So when I told them that I wanted to be a comedian,
yeah.
My mom said, that sounds like you said lawyer? Yeah, but then she would encourage me, said, listen, why don't you become a lawyer and you can tell jokes during the trial?
Yeah. But, I mean, was it tough? I mean, did you feel like, I don't know, guilt? Did you worry if you could make this work? Being a comedian is a tough job, whether or not
you know what, actually, what happened was, I actually, when I finally told her I was going to go and be an actor and a comedian, she got so desperate, she would suggest jobs that I should look into just as a backup.
Yeah.
And she would base it on the last guy who came to our house to fix something. I swear, I'm not kidding. Like, I came home one time, she's like, have you thought about being a washing machine fixer guy? You know, she's like, you could save me money and make a little money as well.
Your mom sounds like the toughest room you've ever worked, probably.
You know what? She was the toughest room, and what's crazy now, she's the biggest fan. So now
really?
She comes over to the house, and she goes, you know, I need some of your T-shirts for my neighbor. I need a couple of DVDs. I'm like, Mom, this stuff costs. She's like, I'm your mother. Just give it to me.
So you're doing, I mean, you're doing ethnic humor here in the United States. Ethnic humor is ethnic humor. But you've actually gone to the Middle East with your act, right?
Yeah, you know, in the end of 2007, me and the other guys from the Axe Evil Comedy Tour, Ahmed Ahmed and Aaron Cater, we all went out to the Middle East, did a tour. We did all these sold-out shows. It was amazing. You know, in Jordan, we did a show where the King of Jordan showed up.
Really?
Yeah, that was pretty crazy.
Wow. What did the King of Jordan think?
I think he was laughing. He invited us to the palace, and we weren't, you know, thrown in prison or anything. You know, actually, what's funny about what you just said is in some of the places you do shows, like in Dubai, you actually have to submit your set to the censors.
Yeah.
And a few times it happened where I was writing out my set, and when you're writing out your set as a comedian, you're like, wow, this doesn't read as funny as it plays when I'm doing it, you know, live.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, now they're going to take this set that's been written out that's not as funny already, and then they're going to translate it to Arabic so the censors can understand it.
Right.
And they might not approve us just based on, this is not funny. Why would they?
Yeah, exactly. You do stuff about all the different cultures of the Middle East, right? Like Egyptians versus Syrians versus Iranians?
Yeah, I do. You know, a lot of that stuff works better in the Middle East where they know about the different...
All right, so give me an example. I want you to give me an example of a kind of joke that would absolutely kill playing on the subtle but important funny differences in the Middle East, and I want you to do it for
okay.
us. All
okay, right? I'm going to try. Like, for example, I was recently in Beirut.
Yes.
And they said that because the Lebanese and the Iranians are obsessed with plastic surgery. They love their plastic surgery.
Right.
So in Beirut, in Lebanon, you can actually get a loan from the bank for plastic surgery.
Okay.
So I don't know how that works. I don't know if people are going in going like, yes, hi, I was going to remodel my house, but I've decided to remodel my wife. We were going to add a bathroom, but we're adding boobs. It works out there.
I know, it works
totally
here.
It works. Yeah, that's great.
Now, is that what you do? You're like, you're in Syria, you tell Jordanian jokes. You're in Jordan, you tell Egyptian jokes. You're in Egypt, you tell Saudi jokes.
Actually, you know what? A lot of times you tell jokes about the country you're in. They love laughing about themselves. Like, people love laughing about how horrible their traffic is. It's
oh,
crazy.
Yeah.
Like in Egypt, I always say, like, there should be a video game for traffic in the Middle East, and Egypt would be the most advanced level.
Oh, absolutely. I've been there. I know what you mean. It's insane. Crossing the street is worth your life.
And they're so casual about everything. Like, last time I saw a little pickup truck with piles of garbage bags piled up like a pyramid.
Yeah.
But they weren't tied down, which made me realize the Egyptians are really good with holding things in places shaped like pyramids.
Yeah.
But just to show off how cocky they were, there was a guy sitting on top of the pile of garbage, and he was combing his hair.
Hey, you gotta look good.
Wow.
You gotta look good. And I was like, what is he, expecting to meet somebody up there? Like, you know.
Maybe he found his comb there.
Yeah. He's been looking for that comb for years, and he found it in the top of the pile of garbage. Well, welcome to the show, Muzz. We have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Here, let me open that bottle for you. Ow!
That was very moving, actually. That was drama.
I hope that was in the script.
It was. It's merely the power of his acting, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow.
What he's trying to get at is that professional baseball players are elite athletes. They demonstrate strength and skill and flexibility that sometimes seems superhuman. which raises the question, why do they keep injuring themselves in really dumb ways? We're going to ask you three questions about the odd ways in which baseball players have hurt themselves just in this season alone. And if you get two questions right, you'll win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their voicemail. Carl, who's comedian Maz Jobrani playing for?
Maz is playing for Edward Pape of San Antonio, Texas.
All right, you ready to play?
I'm ready to do this.
Okay, just a few weeks ago, Jeff Blum of the Houston Astros landed on the 15-day disabled list when he injured himself doing what? A, answering his cell phone, B, putting on his shirt, or C, snoring?
Oh, boy. I'm going to go because I've cramped up before putting on clothes.
Really?
Yeah, this has happened to me. So I'm going with shirt.
You're right. That's what he did. He was putting it on. Wow. Felt the pop. Ended up missing some games. He was diagnosed with floating bodies in his arm. Next question. Left fielder Chris Coughlin of the Florida Marlins is out for 6 to 8 weeks. He hurt his leg trying to do something for another teammate. What was it? A, hit him in the face with a shaving cream pie. B, he was trying to get a female fan's phone number for him from someone in the stands. Or C, he put pepper in that other player's underwear.
Pepper in the other player's underwear,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, he ended up getting hurt.
Yeah, I don't know how you'd hurt your feet doing that.
Oh, you're not thinking.
I'm going to go with the pie in the face. They seem to do that a lot.
And they do that a lot, and when he did it, he hurt his leg. That's right. He came up to his teammate, who just hit the game-winning run. Mm-hmm. Pie in the face, tore his meniscus muscle.
Nice.
Last injury, the most ironic injury this season, happened to Kendry Morales of the Los Angeles Angels. He broke his leg, ending his season doing what? A, he was trying to stretch out his leg so that he would not injure it. B, he was celebrating a game-winning Grand Slam home run at home plate. Or C, he was trying to prevent a teammate from getting into a fight and thereby hurting himself.
Well, I got to tell you, on this one, I'm going to cheat a little because I happened to be watching ESPN just the other day.
Yeah.
And they were showing the stupid thing that happened there.
Yeah.
It was the Grand Slam.
You're right. That's what happened. Aww. You know what happens, right? Player hits a game-winning home run. He runs around the bases. The tradition is the other players gather to greet him in a pile at home plate. Kendry Morales running in, so happy. He jumps up in the air to land amidst his teammates, and he falls straight down on the ground. And then the other players are going, dude, what's up, dude? He's out for the season. Carl, how did Maz Jobrani do on our show?
Maz had 3 correct answers, Peter, so he wins for Edward Pape.
Well done. Woo-hoo. Congratulations. That was done masterfully. That was
well
done.
Thank you very much. I'm happy I had a chance to do this. And Iran wasn't in the World Cup this year, but we got a victory today.
There you go. Makes up for it. Maz Jobrani's DVD, Maz Jobrani Brown and Friendly, is out now. He's performing at the Pasadena Ice House August 27th and 28th. Go see him. You can find out more at MazJobrani.com. Maz, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks a lot, guys.
In just a minute, Carl gives you a home where the buffalo rhyme. Anyway, it's a listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Roy, this week a judge in New York decreed that doing what is a protected right under our Constitution?
Oh.
Cherished freedom.
Well, in New York, I think I know the answer to this somewhere deep in my structure. It's just not coming out. Could you give me a hint to spring it?
Nothing in the Bill of Rights about, you know, wearing a belt, apparently.
Oh, I know what it is, too. It's wearing your pants down so that your underwear.
Exactly shows. Right. That, it turns out, is protected by the First Amendment. Last year, Julio Martinez was charged with disorderly conduct for wearing his pants, quote, below his buttocks, exposing underwear, potentially showing private parts, unquote. But Judge Ruben Franco didn't agree with the charge throughout the case. said, quote, "The Constitution still leaves some opportunity for people to be foolish if they so desire," unquote. And if you go back in the history books, the judge is right. Thomas Jefferson was often seen walking the grounds of Monticello with his jodhpurs all droopy.
So they said that wearing your pants down below your bum
yes.
is protected speech?
It is.
People have
I'd like to say a few things.
Please. We cannot stop you, apparently. Many believe, in fact, that it was Thomas Jefferson that Ben Franklin was referring to when he wrote in Poor Richard's Almanac, quote, "Pants on the ground, pants in the ground. Looking like a fool with your pants on the ground." Paul, please listen to Carl.
"I know she's not doing it on purpose, but she has taken what was supposed to be a special day for me and turned it into hell."
That was a bride-to-be named N. Haddad Friedman. She is getting married in Rhinebeck, New York this weekend and is worried that her wedding might be destroyed by whom?
Chelsea Clinton.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right.
Now, I don't know if you've ever had her at any wedding you've been to, but
oh my
she's
God.
A bad guest.
It is true. The former first daughter's nuptials are going to be a simple, lighthearted, elegant affair with 500 guests and Air Force jets armed with heat-seeking missiles patrolling the airspace above it. Just like a Jane Austen novel. This means guests of the nearby Haddad Friedman wedding will have to traverse the biggest security cordon seen since the last time President Obama snuck out for a cig. But this is Chelsea's day. And we're looking forward to reading the details once WikiLeaks puts them online. Actually, no, it's going to be very traditional for the most part, but I believe Bill Clinton has said he's not going to give away his daughter. He's going to escort her down the aisle and see if what he can get for her in trade. Okay, that was mean.
Yeah.
Roy, we are all delighted that BP finally capped the well in the Gulf, but reports are coming out that the fix they finally came up with, the special kind of cap they put down there, wasn't their idea. Rather, it is being credited to whom?
Stephen Chu?
No.
No.
The Secretary of Energy? No, not he.
Oh, I thought he came up with a lot of ideas. Yeah. Somebody unlikely, then.
Yes.
I won't bring up another New Jersey Shore name, but... somebody, can you give me a hint? I don't think I know the answer.
Well, he's already moved on to the next big leak somewhere under somebody's sink.
Joe the plumber.
Not Joe the plumber.
He already had his big idea.
Yeah.
Well, one of the Nixon's plumbers.
No. I'm going to give it to you. It's a mystery plumber. A plumber. Nobody knows who it is. BP is not naming any names. But at least one plumber, Les Goldstein of Boca Raton, Florida, has come forward to say that the design for the cap was his idea. Others are saying that a different anonymous plumber should get the credit, as soon as he's not anonymous anymore. In any event, I mean, however true this turns out to be, we love the idea of a mystery plumber roaming around, solving the world's plumbing problem.
Right. That explains why it should be a right for everybody to wear their pants very low.
Exactly. This guy would be a modern-day Zorro with the mask over the butt crack. You know? Yeah.
Gonna take my plunger, unstrap the train. With what I got, I can do most anything. 'Cause I'm the plumber man. That's who I am, baby. I'm the plumber man.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank. But first, it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play an air call, to leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. Or our upcoming show in Oklahoma City, September 23rd. Good tickets are still available. Hi, you're at Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
It's June Denson from Delightful DeLand, Florida. How are you, Peter?
I'm fine, June. Is that what it's called, Delightful DeLand?
Well, that's what I call it.
There you are. Is it delightful?
It is. It's a lovely little town.
So what do you do there?
I'm a writer
and
a sculptor. Yeah.
Oh, wow. What do you write?
I'm working on a book at present.
Excellent. I mean, right now?
Could you put it down for 1 minute?
For God's sake.
That's the trouble, Roy. It's been down for a while.
June, welcome to the show. Carl Castle right now is going to perform for you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks will be a winner. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
Here is your
first. But have a heart, Carl. Have a heart.
All right, here is your first limerick.
My beer has a nice frothy head, and the bottle gives me macho cred. Though it's taxidermied, it won't make me squirmy. It's poured from a squirrel that's...
It's poured from a what?
Squirrel.
A what?
A squirrel that's...
Dead.
Yes. It's hard to pour it from a squirrel that was alive. You know what would make your refreshing ice-cold beer even more delicious? Roadkill. Scottish craft brewery BrewDog has released a 55-proof beer served in a taxidermied rodent.
Oh.
It costs $760 a bottle, but the first batch sold out right away. But they could even do better if they thought bigger. What about drinking Grey Goose out of a Grey Goose? Cold duck out of a cold duck. Jack Daniels out of a little drunk guy.
You know what's great, though? You get a six-pack of that beer, head on down to the PETA meetings.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, these little animals, these taxidermy animals with beer in them sold out very quickly, but mostly it was to the appalled relatives of the packaging. Just give us Uncle Chuck back, okay?
He was a teetotaler, too.
Oh, me.
Here is your next limerick.
Big screens say that it would behoove me to seek love and then things will be groovy. But life doesn't end like the rom-coms pretend. I went wrong because I trusted a...
movie.
Right! A movie. Well, folks, when it comes to real life, love is less like the movies and more like C-SPAN. Experts... Yes. Experts now say that romantic comedies are ruining real-life relationships because of, you know, heightened and unrealistic expectations. What we want, Love Actually or Sleepless in Seattle, what we get is falling asleep on the couch watching Love Actually and Sleepless in Seattle. Here is your last limerick.
I'll get back the smile of my youth. No, really, I'm telling the truth. My dental decay will just go away. Thanks to gel that regrows a bad...
tooth?
Tooth, yes! Big breakthrough.
Hooray!
Big breakthrough in the field of weird, creepy medical things. Scientists in France say they have invented a special gel that can regrow teeth. It works by stimulating the cells in your teeth to multiply. So you just slap it on your gums, any tooth lost to decay or... by being a drunken idiot, will miraculously grow back. Watch out, though. Don't actually switch your tooth gel for your hair gel, or you'll wake up a stegosaurus. Carl, how did June do in our quiz?
June was perfect, Peter. Three correct answers. So, June, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done.
Or voicemail.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank
Wonderful.
You, June, for calling.
I'm thrilled. Thanks so much. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Brush your teeth. Do the right thing. Brush them in the front and back and treat them like the king. I said there's toothpaste in the house. Tastes so fine. Flavors come in bubblegum. And even lemon lime. With bad hygiene, your teeth are looking scary.
Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie, Peter. Roy, Amy, and Paul each has 3 points.
Whoa. Okay.
Ooh, now it gets like Thunderdome.
Oh, yeah. All right, we've randomly decided that Roy will go first, so here we go. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Russian Prime Minister Putin met with the 10 blanks who were recently deported from the U.S.
Spies.
Right. Ousted USDA employee blank announced that she is suing the blogger who posted the edited video of her speech.
Oh, gosh, I can't think of her name. Shirley... Sedek. I can't
remember. No, Shirley Sherrod.
Sherrod.
Because of a steering problem, blank recalled 428,000 vehicles in the U.S. and Japan.
Toyota.
Right. The District of Columbia and 18 states were named as finalists in Race for the Top, the largest federal blank grant ever awarded.
Running uphill.
No. Education. Education. Oh. An attempted dine and dash at a Waffle House in Missouri failed miserably when two of the three diners accidentally blanked.
Stepped on butter.
No. Left their purses behind. Experts said that negatives bought at a garage sale for $45 of the work of photographer blank.
Oh, Ansel Adams.
Right. This week, an Oklahoma paper ran a scathing ad attacking judicial candidate John Mantooth, written by blank.
His daughter.
Yes. John Mantooth's daughter's ad says in huge letters, "Do not vote for my dad." Jan Schill said she knew that her dad would be upset by the ad. He's overly sensitive that way. The people had to know. Mantooth has not responded directly to the ad, but his daughter has been grounded for 2 weeks. Carl, how did Roy do in our quiz?
Roy had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. He now has 11 points, and Roy has the lead.
All right. Well done.
All right.
Amy, you're up next. Fill in the blank. New concerns were raised when a tugboat ran into another oil well in the blank.
The Gulf.
Right. In spite of his efforts for a last-minute deal on Thursday, a House ethics panel outlined 13 charges against New York Representative blank.
Oh, shoot. His name just flew out of my head. Rangel.
Right. Charlie Rangel. Congress voted Wednesday to reduce the disparity in sentences for people convicted of possession of various types of blank.
Cocaine.
Right. Hikers in Montana were on alert this week after campers at the Soda Butte campground were attacked by blanks.
Bears.
Right. When a North Carolina woman reported having trouble with her car, mechanics traced the problem to a blank.
Squirrel in the motor.
Cheeseburger and pickle in her gas tank. This week, Catalonia became the first region in Spain to outlaw the sport of blank.
Bullfighting.
Right, them's fighting words. An investigation by ESPN showed that a majority of concession stands at blanks across the U.S. had major health violations.
Ballparks.
Right. After thieves repeatedly stole their town sign, residents of the English town of blank pooled their resources together and bought a heavier post.
Take this sign, England.
No.
It's, are you going to say the name of the town?
It's the name of a town in England. It's Shitterton, England, is what it is. A group of proud Shittertonians finally fed up. Chipped in to have the town name engraved on a 1.5-ton stone, said one resident. Let's see them try to smuggle that away in their trunk. Carl, how did Amy do in our quiz?
Amy had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 15 points, and Amy has the lead.
So, Carl, how many does Paul need to win?
He needs 6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
All right. Ready to go, Paul?
Okay.
All right. Here we go, Paul. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. Arizona announced that it would appeal a judge's ruling that puts key parts of its new blank
immigration law.
Yes, on hold. Bad weather hampered recovery efforts at the site of the plane crash in blank on Wednesday.
Pakistan.
Right. According to Senator Claire McCaskill, 6,600 graves at blank might be mislabeled.
Arlington.
Right. The U.S. Copyright Office announced this week that it was not illegal to jailbreak a blank.
iPhone.
Right. A hiker in Austria was hospitalized with minor injuries after being hit by a blank.
A bottle with a squirrel around it.
No, a falling, mountain goat. Goat is fine. Mm-hmm. Not supposed to happen.
So get a half credit for that.
On Monday, the Spanish man who underwent a full blank transplant spoke at a news conference for the first time since the surgery. Face, yes. In a Twitter, Ellen DeGeneres announced that she'd be leaving the show blank.
American Idol.
Right. A woman who shoplifted a dress from a store at which she was applying for a job got busted when she blanked.
Oh. Shoplifted a dress at a store.
No, when she wore the dress, she shoplifted to the job interview at that store. The woman came in dressed to the nines, handed in a resume, interviewed with the manager, and then stuffed her purse full of store merchandise on the way out. The manager who spotted the theft on security cameras then realized the dress the woman was wearing was one she had shoplifted the day before. Mm-hmm. Said police, it is unlikely she'll be getting an interview in the near future. Mm-hmm. Carl, did Paul Prevenza do well enough to win?
Well, Paul needed at least 6 to tie, and he had 6 correct
answers. Well done.
So with 15 points, Amy Dickinson and Paul Prevenza are this week's show champions.
Well done. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict what will be the next big leak from WikiLeaks. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Angie's List, providing consumer reviews on local professionals, from physicians and veterinarians to plumbers and roofers. Details at angieslist.com. Pabst Brewing, proud supporter of local artists nationwide and of the NPR Live and Concert Series, online at pabstblueribbon.com. And to the National Association of Realtors, providing information for those buying or selling their homes at houselogic.com/buy and sell. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Siri Belusu. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Mohammed Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walterover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction from Showbiz Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the next big leak? Roy Blunt Jr.
The estranged wife of a certain military contractor will release a trove of receipts, each one signed Ahmed, 9 billion receipts, each one for a dollar, and each one in the same handwriting.
Amy Dickinson.
Okay, it's called WikiGib, and it's going to be the 1,750 pages of Mel Gibson's mugshots.
Oof. And Paul Prevenza.
Secret British Petroleum documents will reveal that the little Dutch boy with his finger in the hole is running out of air.
And if any of that comes out, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Girl Castle. Thanks to Amy Dickinson, Bob Provenza, Roy Martinez. Thanks to all of you fabulous people for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will be back next week. Woo-hoo!
This is NPR.